The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to America's Web Radio. This is Ron Bachman, and today we're going to focus on the Republican presidential candidate, Nikki Haley. She's been governor of South Carolina, ambassador to the United Nations. She's been involved in politics at various levels of state government as she was growing to become governor of the state. She currently has been campaigning very hard in Iowa and New Hampshire, and while she has been the third leading candidate behind Donald Trump and Governor Ron DeSantis, she has been moving up in the polls, and in several polls, she is number two. And if you were to combine her and Governor DeSantis' vote, if one or the other one decides to drop out or combine forces and somehow, you've got probably 30% or more of the vote just from those two. If others dropped out, now you got a real challenge to Donald Trump and a real horse race for the Republican nomination. Right now it's not. Donald Trump is way, way ahead by sometimes 50 points or so. But in any case, I think it's really important that we spend some time and focus on who this Nikki Haley is and what her record has been and whether she is somebody that, as a conservative, you ought to think about supporting. As a Republican, you ought to think about supporting. Or if you're an independent, is this a new voice, a new generation that ought to bring us together in a way that we've not been brought together in a decade or more? So let me ask the first question of Governor Haley. Tell us a little bit about your background at the state government as a starting point.
South Carolina was hurting. We had 11% unemployment. We had thousands of people on welfare. And South Carolina was the butt of the jokes. And we got to work. And by the time I left, we were building planes with Boeing. We were building more BMWs than any place in the world. We brought in Mercedes-Benz. We brought in Volvo, five international tire companies. They were referring to South Carolina as the beast of the Southeast, which I still love. We moved that 11% unemployment down to 4%. We announced jobs in every county in the state, and we acknowledged a truce. We said, if you have to show picture ID to buy Sudafed, if you've got to show picture ID to get on a plane, you should have to show picture ID to protect the integrity of the election process. That's one of the toughest illegal immigration laws in the country. We reduced taxes. We filled our coffers. We grew our economy, and we moved thousands of people from welfare to work. And by the time I left, we were named the friendliest state in the country. We were named the most patriotic state in the country. And we were named the number two state in the country people were moving to.
Okay, Governor Haley, that's a pretty good, elevator discussion of some of the highlights of your governorship. And I'm sure we will talk about more as we go along in this presentation. Let's talk a little bit about your being ambassador for the United States to the United Nations. That's a job maybe some people don't remember or know that you even carried out. Tell us about your time at the United Nations.
And then I got the call to go to the United Nations. And my honest answer was, I don't even know what the UN does. I just know everybody hates it. But when you get the chance to serve your country, you jump. And so when I got to the UN, I wanted countries to know what America was for and what America was against. I didn't care if they didn't like me, but I wanted them to respect America. And we got to work. We pulled ourselves out of the Iran deal. I negotiated with China and Russia to pass the largest set of sanctions against a country in a generation against North Korea. And the ballistic missile testing stopped. We acknowledged a truce and moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. But the biggest thing that we did, we took the kick me sign off of our backs, and America was respected again at the United Nations.
Okay, Governor, I think what people listening to this program want to know is a little bit about your background. We talked about being governor very briefly and about your time at the United Nations. Tell us a little bit more about why you're running for president of the United States and maybe a little bit about what you would do once you're president.
Running for president And I don't need to tell you how bad things are. You don't have to turn on the news to see it. You feel it when you go to the grocery store. Groceries and our electricity is up 25% since pre-COVID. You feel it when you go fill up your car with gas. We feel it in our mortgage payments, in our rent. Everything is more expensive on the things that we have to have. And I would love to be able to tell you that Biden did that to us. But I have always spoken hard truths, and I'm going to do that with you tonight. As much as Biden sent us down this roller coaster of socialism, which is dangerous and we have to stop, our Republicans did that to us too. You look at that $2.2 trillion COVID stimulus bill that they passed with no accountability, that expanded welfare, that has now left us with 100 million Americans on Medicaid, 42 million Americans on food stamps. That's a third of our country. And did Republicans try and make it right? No. They opened up pet projects and earmarks for the first time in 10 years, pushing through 7,000 of them last December. Want to know how they spent your money? $30 million on an honors college in Vermont. $10 million to tear down a hotel in Alaska. $7.5 million on a courthouse in Colorado. And the list goes on. In the 2024 appropriations budget, Republicans put in $7.4 billion worth of pet projects and earmarks. Democrats put in $2.8 billion. Now you tell me who the big spenders are. All while one in six American families can't afford their utility bill, 60% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, 50% of American families can't afford diapers, Social Security will go bankrupt in 10 years, Medicare will go bankrupt in 8.
Okay, so Governor, you're talking about fiscal sanity. I know that you are an accountant by background in trade, and you'll take that sort of focus on dollars to Washington, which doesn't use normal accounting at the federal level. So there will be some looking very hard in your administration at the excess costs and spending that we have and ways to save money. Every politician says that. At least you have a track record in South Carolina's governor having to do that. Let's add one more introductory feature here and tell us about your educational reform programs and what we need to do in those areas, because that's become such a big issue for many families on the craziness that's going on in our schools, the growth of homeschooling that's going on because of that, and the exposure to all sorts of woke ideologies that are in our schools today. So tell us a little bit about your educational ideas.
Then you look at our education system, and everybody wants to blame COVID for education. We had problems with education before COVID. Do you know right now in America, only 29% of eighth graders in our country are proficient in reading? 29%. Only 26% of American kids, eighth graders, are proficient in math. If we don't do something quick, we're going to be in a world of hurt 10 years from now.
Okay, Governor, I know we're not giving a lot of time to full expansive answers to these different areas. We'll come back and sort of flush out some of the details of education and your background and your governing philosophies, all those sorts of things. But let's continue with sort of this quick hit on some of your thoughts around. Let's turn our attention now to the border. Give us your thoughts on what's going on at the border and your concerns there.
Then you go and you look at the border. I have truly run out of things to say about how irresponsible it is at the border. It is a total dereliction of duty. And why nothing has been done up until now is beyond careless. Because America is acting like it's September 10th. And we better remember what September 12th felt like. It only takes one. And I've been to the border, and I didn't pull a Kamala, go and come back. I went 400 miles down that border. You're not ready for what I saw. mounds of clothes, mounds of shoes, paraphernalia, rape areas that the women and girls had to go through. When you get up in the morning, you get your coffee, and you watch the news. When these ranchers get up in the morning, they get their coffee and they go see if anyone died crossing the fence. They pick up whatever little kids are left behind and they turn them over to Border Patrol. I met with multiple sheriffs. They said before 7 a.m. they round up whatever illegal immigrants they can find. They turn them over to Border Patrol. Border Patrol documents them and releases them until their court date years from now. And when I asked Border Patrol about their jobs, they said, you want to know what we do? We're glorified babysitters. They don't let us do our job. 7 million illegal immigrants have crossed that southern border. You feel it because over 200,000 have crossed the northern border. We've had enough fentanyl cross the border that would kill every single American last year. Number one cause of death for adults 18 to 45, fentanyl. And don't think for a second China doesn't know what they're doing when they send it over.
Okay, Governor, I think you're laying out for our audience who's listening in your conservative concepts, your ideologies that are very consistent with the number of conservative leaders that are running. And I know you can differentiate yourself and where you would provide the emphasis and some of the specifics. And we'll talk about that in the next segment. But let's continue with sort of this elevator discussion of some of the hot points for conservatives. And another one is how we treat our military these days and our veterans. Tell us about the issues that you're concerned about with veterans.
And then my parents always told us, you take care of those who take care of you. This one's personal. I'm going to ask you if we've taken care of those who take care of us. Did you know right now in America, 33,000 of our veterans are homeless? That we know of. One in three veterans suffers from PTSD or thoughts of suicide. We lose 22 heroes a day to suicide. If a veteran needs a doctor's appointment, on average, it takes them 29 days. Why 29 days? Because on the 30th day, they can go to the doctor or hospital of their choice. So midway through the 29 days, they get a call to reschedule, and the clock starts all over again. It is shameful how we treat our veterans.
Well, Governor, I really appreciate this first segment here of just touching on a couple of hot topics and the brief answers that you provide. I know you got a lot more detail in all your programs that you've outlined on your website and during your campaign. I want to get into that a little bit more. So let's take a quick break, and we're going to come back with this conservative candidate, previous governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley. I think you'll stay with us. You will find that she's got a lot of substance and a lot of potential, and you'll be able to understand better why she's rising rapidly in the polls and that she has made a real impact already in the Republican primary and likely to make an impact when we get to the early primary states of Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. Hang with us. We'll be right back.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
If you want the truth about politics, medicine, weapons, classic cars, and more, you'll want to tune in to America's Web Radio. You can listen to all of your favorite shows live at www.americaswebradio.com or on demand on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. That's www.americaswebradio.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio, and today we are focusing on the Republican presidential candidate, Nikki Haley, a previous governor of South Carolina, ambassador to the United Nations. In the last segment, we did sort of a quick hit on some of the issues that are important to conservatives and that she has been promoting. We talked about a number of very hot topics, but didn't give a lot of time and detail in them. But I wanted the audience to sort of get an overview of her conservative bona fides, if you will. She is a strong conservative. She helped to implement some of the policies of Donald Trump. And but she's a much kinder, softer version of conservatism. And so I wanted to spend a little bit more time in this segment focusing with longer answers from her. And so let's start with the economy. Governor, if you would, give us a more detailed outline of some of the economic issues and policies that you would implement if you were elected president.
What do? When it comes to the economy, we start by clawing back the $500 billion worth of unspent COVID dollars that are still out there. Instead of the 87,000 IRS agents going after middle America, let's go after the hundreds of billions of dollars of COVID fraud, one out of every $7. If 8% of our budget is interest, quit borrowing. I had to balance a budget as governor. Why is Congress the only group that refuses to balance a budget? We will stop the spending, we'll stop the borrowing, we'll eliminate the earmarks, and I will veto any spending bill that doesn't take us back to pre-COVID levels. That will save us trillions. And then we need to focus on the middle class. We are watching in America, the rich are getting richer, and the poor are getting poorer. We've got to focus on the middle class. That's why we are going to eliminate the federal gas and diesel tax in this country. The second thing we're going to do is we're going to cut taxes on middle America and simplify those brackets. We're going to make the small business tax cuts permanent. They made corporate tax cuts permanent, but they made small business tax cuts temporary. We need to make those permanent so that we can really start getting our economy going again. That's the focus that we need to have. And then there were two things at the United Nations that Russia, China, and Iran never wanted us to have. They never wanted us to have a strong military, and they never wanted us to be energy independent. We won't just be energy independent. We will be energy dominant. Right now, the EPA cares more about sagebrush lizards than they do about whether we can afford our electricity bill. We need to make sure that we are speeding up the pipeline process. We need to get the bureaucracy and the regs out of the way. We need to be exporting as much liquefied natural gas as we can and make it an economic boom. That will build the coffers in our economy as well. And when we do that, that's when we'll start to be economically smart. And that's the key. We have to be smart. Right now, with the way we're going, we're going to be paying more in interest payments in a couple of years than our defense budget. And when that happens, you weaken the dollar and you also stop being a superpower. We can't let that happen.
Very interesting answers, Governor. I think people in the audience listening to this maybe are really starting to develop an understanding of how conservative you are and that you're not a rhino Republican by any ways, shapes, means, or accusation that some have thrown on you. You seem to have a very conservative philosophy. Now, let's talk about education in more detail now. Give us your thoughts on what we have to do with educational reform in this country at the federal level.
When it comes to education in South Carolina, we knew if a child couldn't read by third grade, they were four times less likely to graduate high school. So we started holding our kids back. We brought in their parents. We did reading remediation programs, and we set them up for success. We have got to quit pushing these kids ahead if they can't read. We need to do that all over the country. The second thing is no parent should ever wonder what's being said or taught to their child in the classroom. We need complete transparency in the classroom. As parents, we have one job, and that's to make sure we get our kids right. And that is why every parent should be able to choose which school their child goes to. You know best what they need. Every child deserves a good education, regardless of where they're born and raised. We have to stop educating kids based on a zip code. And then, Let's build things in America again. Let's put vocational classes back into our high school. In South Carolina, we had apprenticeships all over our state. We taught our kids how to build the things we were making. That way you get them invested in our economy before they finish.
So, Governor, now let's get into a little bit more detail about the border. President Trump ran in 2016 on build a wall, and that certainly got a lot of attention. He built some wall, but we still have an immigration problem because we have an administration that's not complying with the law. They did not finish the wall. They let people in. They dispersed them throughout the country. Tell us what you would do about border security.
Now, when it comes to the border, that one's a doozy, but it's got to be handled immediately. The way that we will do that is, first of all, we have to acknowledge the fact that what I did in South Carolina, we're going to do it nationally. We will do a national E-Verify program and require every business to prove that the people they hire in their business are here legally. The second thing is we are going to finally defund sanctuary cities. It will take care of stolen guns, drugs, you name it. We've got to get that and bring law and order back to our cities. And then let's make sure we'll put 25,000 Border Patrol and ICE agents on the ground and let them do their job. We will go back to the Remain in Mexico policy because no one should even step foot in the United States to start with. And instead of catch and release, we will go to catch and deport. Biden just gave temporary status to 500,000 Venezuelans. I can tell you from my time at the United Nations, you know what happened after that? Every one of those Venezuelans called their family members and told them they got temporary status. That's 500,000 social security numbers. That's 500,000 driver's licenses. We can't keep incentivizing those to skip the line that legal immigrants are in.
Well, Governor, we talked about veterans in the earlier session, but I want to give you a little bit more time to sort of flesh out some of the concerns and some of the issues that I know you want to focus on for the veterans in our military services. Give us a little bit more background there.
Now, what are we going to do about those that we owe the biggest debt of gratitude? What are we going to do about our veterans? You know, the press shows you the tears that are shed when our loved ones deploy. And then we see the tears we cry when our loved ones come back home to us safe. And it's a blessed day. I am the wife of a combat veteran. He deployed in Afghanistan. The day he came back home to us was an answered prayer. But that was the easy part. When we got home, that's when things really got hard. Michael couldn't hear loud noises. He couldn't be in crowds. Life had passed him by for the year that he was gone, and the transition was tough. We can't just love our men and women when they're gone. You gotta love them when they come back home, too. We've gotta make sure that we have telehealth, have the mental health care they need right when they need it. Let's make sure they can go to the doctor or hospital of their choice. They've earned that right. We will make sure we take good care of our veterans. So we have the answers. On the domestic side, we know what we need to do to get back on track.
You know, Governor, sometimes in a presidential election, the focus is more on domestic policy and economics. We certainly have those issues with high inflation and high interest rates going on domestically. But we also have these foreign debacles and wars that are going on that have engaged us and have the danger of drawing us in even further. Tell us about your foreign policy interests and direction and what you might do with things like Ukraine and what's going on in Israel and Gaza and what we should really be doing and how important it is to either engage or to disengage.
Did you ever think we'd look at the sky and see a Chinese spy balloon going over our country? The world is literally on fire. You've got a war in Europe. You've got a war in the Middle East. You've got North Korea testing ballistic missiles. You've got China on the march. But make no mistake, none of that would have happened had we not had that debacle in Afghanistan. The idea that my husband and his military brothers and sisters who serve there had to watch us leave Bagram Air Force Base in the middle of the night without telling our allies who stood shoulder to shoulder with us for decades because we asked them to be there. Think about what that told our friends. More importantly, think about what that said to our enemies. America has to get this right. And so now you have DC saying, do we support Ukraine or do we support Israel? Do we support Israel or do we support closing the border and border security? Don't let them lie to you like that. Don't let them tell you that, because that is a false premise. Let's take it one by one. Let's start with Ukraine. You should know, I had no better friend at the United Nations than Ukraine. They voted with us on absolutely everything. I could have a press conference, they'd show up without me even asking. But look at what happened. You had this thug invade a pro-American, freedom-loving country. 500,000 people have died because of Putin over this. And what happened? They're fighting for their survival. Dictators always tell us what they're going to do. They're actually very transparent. Think about it. Hamas told us they were going to do that in Israel. China told us they were going to invade Hong Kong. They did. Russia said they were going to invade Ukraine. We watched it. China says Taiwan is next. We better believe them. Russia has said after Ukraine, Poland and the Baltics are next. Those are NATO countries. That puts us at war. We are trying to prevent war. It's always about prevention. That's the key. That's what you do to national security, is how do you prevent war? So if Ukraine wins, Russia stops. And this war would end today. If Russia left today, the war would be over. If Ukraine stops fighting, they lose their country. That's what's happening. And I will first tell you, I don't believe we should ever give cash to any country.
Audience, I know I let that segment go on a little bit longer about foreign policy, but it is so important and so critical that we have a president that can deal with and understands the world opinions of us, the world attitudes, the world actions, as have happened in the past, that people at the United Nations certainly show their cards and their hatred for the United States, even though we fund a vast majority of the United Nations budget. So let's continue with Governor Nikki Haley, president candidate for the United States on the Republican side. We'll be right back after the next commercial break.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org, and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
Veteran-owned, America's Web Radio would like to thank all of our incredible patrons. We wouldn't be able to do this without you. If you are not already a patron, you can help us continue to produce some of the most informative and entertaining shows on the internet by becoming a patron. Patrons of America's Web Radio are the first to receive information about new shows and links to the latest podcast episodes. Join now and receive a free gift while supplies last. For more information and to join our family, please visit www.patreon.com/AmericasWebRadio. If you have questions, contact us at gm@AmericasWebRadio.com. And as always, thank you for listening.
What will Victor say next? Find out every Tuesday at 1 p.m. on the On Point with Victor show, only on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio. Today, we are focusing in on presidential candidate of the Republican Party, Nikki Haley. Governor Nikki Haley from South Carolina, Ambassador Nikki Haley, who was our ambassador to the United Nations during the Trump administration. She has been surging in the polls, and I think it's really appropriate for our audience out there to listen to some of her policies, her comments, or thoughts about what she would do as President of the United States. And I think that we're getting to the heart of it without interruption of some moderator or some questioner. So I want to ask her these questions and maybe make some comments about her responses at the end. So let's get back into the details of presidential candidate Nikki Haley. And Governor Haley, tell us about your thoughts on the Ukraine situation. It's got a lot of people worried about where it might go, where it might lead, how involved the United States has been. Tell us about what your thinking is on Ukraine.
We need to give them the equipment and the ammunition to win. If Biden had done this in the beginning, first of all, if he had done prevention in the beginning, we wouldn't have had a war. But if Biden had given them the equipment and ammunition they asked for in the beginning, this war would be over. Ukraine has a stellar military force. They have now basically gotten rid of 50% of Russia's defense forces. They've eliminated 50% of their forces. The draft age, Russia's now in a draft. The draft age now has been raised to 65. We know they've hit rock bottom because they're getting drones from Iran and missiles from North Korea. If we support Ukraine with equipment and ammunition, that is only 3% of our defense budget. 3%. 3.5% to be exact. The Europeans are giving more money than we are, and they should. It's their neighborhood.
Well, Governor, I can't resist but to make a comparison that Donald Trump is talking about how he could end the war in 24 hours. Of course, he tends to exaggerate most everything, but that he's got the kind of political sway and power of personality and ideas of the negotiating deals that he would end the war, not just finance it. And I noticed that you just say, well, it's only 3.5%, but that's a lot of dollars that could be going to building ships, buying new equipment. We've been draining our stockpile of arms, so I'm not quite sure that I follow with the minimalist attitude that it seems to be when it's a very major drain on our military and our political attention. But let me turn it now over to also the Israeli conflict in Gaza Strip and what happened on October 7th. Tell us about your thinking about October 7th and what's right or wrong with what's going on in our involvement with Israel.
Now let's go to what happened on October 7th. I'm truly haunted by what happened on October 7th. And the reason that I am is because I gave a speech to the entire world at the United Nations 5 years ago. And in that speech, I said, we know there are maps. And these maps are held by Hamas. And it says if they can get through that barrier, this is how they kill as many Jews as fast as they can before people show up. And it happened. There are a few times in history where we need to make sure that America has moral clarity. There's never been a time more important than this. An American president has to know the difference between good and evil, has to know the difference between right and wrong. We should be doing three things with Israel. One, give them whatever they need, whenever they need it, no questions asked. Eliminate Hamas. And thirdly, do whatever it takes to get our hostages home. Other candidates will tell you this is Israel's war. This is personal. 33 Americans were butchered on October 7th. There are American hostages right now. This is personal to us. We have to get that right. So when it comes to Israel, remember, they're the tip of the spear when it comes to fighting terrorism. Because when they beheaded those people, beheaded those Israelis, burned those babies alive, and raped those girls at that concert, They took their naked bodies and dragged them through the streets of Gaza. And what did they say? Death to Israel, death to America. It's never been that Israel needs America. It's always been that America needs Israel. Because they're the tip of the spear when it comes to defeating terrorism. And they're a bright spot in a tough neighborhood.
Okay, Governor, I hear you, and the policies that you would implement would be very popular with the American people, and the right thing to do, recognizing evil that we've got to eliminate. We've got a cancer growing in the Gaza City and the Gaza Strip area that Israel is taking out for the benefit of the entire world. There are those out there that say, well, we've got two wars going on that we're supporting with equipment, not with men on the ground, but obviously we have some special forces in both of those areas. We have some military support on the ground for training and like I say, special forces. But what's your response to people who say, well, we just can't afford multiple wars out there when we have threats from China and Russia and other areas around the world? How do we deal with the financial implications of two wars at a minimum going on right now?
For us to go and support Ukraine and Israel with the equipment and ammunition they're requesting, that's 5% of our defense budget. That's it. 5% of our defense budget. When they say, but what about those and the border? We should absolutely secure the border immediately. That's American national security. So if we were to do Israel, Ukraine, and securing the border, that's less than 20% of Biden's green subsidies that he passed. So don't tell me it's not about money. It's about priorities. And there is nothing more important than keeping Americans safe.
Governor, thank you for your responses in each of these areas. And I hope our audience listening in will be able to compare and contrast your position, the strength of your position, the weaknesses of your position, the differences in your position from other candidates, because I think that's ultimately going to be how people will vote on foreign policy issues. And, of course, we have domestic issues. But let's stay on the foreign policy issues and talk about China, because we said there's more than just these two wars that are going on. There's threats of wars in the Asian area as well from both China and North Korea and maybe others that will crop up. But at least those two as major forces are developing or already have significant military capability. So tell us about your thinking on China and what we should be doing about China in our foreign policy area.
Then let's talk about the biggest national security threat we face, China. China has been planning war with us for years, and that's not me exaggerating. They're already here. They've infiltrated. Look at what's happened. They bought 400,000 acres of U.S. soil, most recently near Grand Forks Air Force Base, where our most sensitive drone technology is. They've spent millions of dollars into our universities, stealing our research, spreading Chinese propaganda. You look at, we've had more Americans die of fentanyl than the Iraq, Afghanistan, and Vietnam wars combined. We lost 75,000 Americans to fentanyl last year. There are certain technologies that we never want China to get because it strengthens their military and it threatens America. Yet the Biden administration approved 70% of those requests last year. And then when it comes to, well, you know, we all freaked out about the Chinese spy balloon, right? What about the fact that 90% of our law enforcement drones in this country are Chinese? So think of all of the mini surveillance that's happening as we speak. And China has built up their military at a scary pace. They now have 500 nuclear warheads. That's 100 more than they had last year. They have the largest naval fleet in the world. They have 370 ships. They'll have 400 ships in 2 years. We won't even have 350 ships in two decades. They're doing artificial intelligence. They're doing space. They're doing cyber. They've developed hypersonic missiles. We've barely gotten started. And now China's the leading developer of neurostrike weapons. weapons engineered to change the brain activity of military commanders and segments of the population. That's who we're dealing with. So when Biden and Yellen want to tell you that China's a competitor, every day I dealt with China at the United Nations. They never saw us as a competitor. They always saw us as an enemy. We've got to look at them the way they see us.
Well, Governor, I'm glad you outlined very specifically a number of the threats, among many others, that the Chinese government and communism threatens us with. But the real issue a lot of people would like to know is, how are you going to deal with it? How are we going to change? How is your administration going to be different in how they deal with the Chinese?
So how do we deal with China? The first thing you do is you stop selling any U.S. soil to them, and we take back the land they've already purchased. The second thing is we need to get all of this foreign intrusion out of our universities. It's not just Chinese money, by the way. There's Arab money in there. And you look at the pro-Hamas rallies. We go to universities and we say, you either take foreign money or you take American money, but the days of taking both are over. We will blacklist all technology that strengthens China and hurts America. And we will go to China and say, we're going to end all normal trade relations with you until you stop murdering Americans with fentanyl. You watch how fast they fix that. And when it comes to our military, remember, strong militaries don't start wars. Strong militaries prevent wars. But in order to be strong, that doesn't mean throwing a bunch of money at the Department of Defense. It means cleaning up the Department of Defense. We have to be focused on the future. The past wars were land, air, and sea. Future threats are going to also be artificial intelligence, space, and cyber. We've got to focus on modernizing our military, making sure that our men and women have what they need to deal with the threats in the future. And for God's sake, we have got to stop these gender pronoun classes so we know what we need to do to make sure that we keep our country safe.
Governor, I think you've hit on the right issues. I think it's also interesting that Governor DeSantis, probably your biggest competitor for the number two slot against Donald Trump, is that in Florida, he has outlawed the purchase of land by Chinese. He's also eliminated the Confucius Institute, that is communist Chinese-based, infiltrating the universities. So in Florida, he's taken a much stronger stance and has an example of how he has done that in the state. I don't think you were able to do that in South Carolina because it wasn't quite the national issue. So I'm sure you'll move and do the right issues on the national level. But it's interesting to notice the difference between you and Governor DeSantis on these issues. Well, audience, I hope that you are also sort of making the contrast and comparisons in your own mind among the different candidates. They're all on the very conservative side, how strong their positions are, how much so emphasize it as an administration, whether it's hitting the hot topics that are of most concern to you. I think, and hopefully this podcast, this program will answer some of those questions for you. Let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back to wrap up this hour with Governor Nikki Haley, presidential candidate for the Republican Party.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, join me, Roger B., every Tuesday at 1400 hours right here on America's Web Radio for the Locked and Loaded Show. We will talk about guns, weapons, ammo, gun accessories, prepping, and so much more. So be sure to join us every Tuesday at 1400 or 2 p.m. for Locked and Loaded on America's Web Radio.
If you want the truth about politics, medicine, weapons, classic cars, and more, you'll want to tune in to America's Web Radio. You can listen to all of your favorite shows live at www.americaswebradio.com or on demand on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. That's www.americaswebradio.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio and our final segment today on Republican presidential candidate Governor Nikki Haley. I think if you've been listening this whole hour, we have a rather fascinating view of her conservative approach to governance, what she has done, what she plans to do. And I want to delve into that a little bit more during this final segment and get her overall view of the picture of the United States and where she really wants to take us. So I want to start this final segment with the idea that so many people seem to hate our country. We got demonstrations against Israel. We've got people that are robbing stores and breaking in. We've got the Black Lives Matters, Antifa folks. We've got anarchists. We've got communists. We've got all sorts of people who are trying to separate and destroy this country. We've got people from the outside, whether it's China using TikTok or other social media groups that are trying to divide us into arguing groups. We've not come together. And I know I'm older than most people probably listening to this program, but we don't come together with a sense of pride and patriotism that we have had all during my youth and most of my adult life. And we've only seen it in the last number of years of people just really seeming to hate this country or anything we stand for, hate capitalism as we start to move more and more towards a socialism, if not a communist, Marxist type of political philosophy in this country. We have people elected to Congress who are openly socialists, who are anti-American. How they get elected, I have no understanding of that process. But let me ask Governor Haley about this a really most critical issue of our own self-loathing and how we get back to where we are. Have pride in America and pride in our capitalist system, pride in how we have raised up so many people from poverty, pride in the standard of living that we're able to provide over 330 million people, and why we are the envy of the world, why everybody wants to cross our borders to come in here, because we still have that hope and dream for the future for new citizens, new entries into this country. So, Governor Haley, tell us about this issue of pride in America.
We have to end this national self-loathing that has taken over our country. The idea that they say America's bad or rotten or racist. I was elected the first female minority governor in history. America's not racist. We're blessed. Kids need to know to love America. They need to be saying the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, 5 months ago, I dropped my husband, Michael, off at 4 a.m. for another year-long deployment. And I watched him and 230 soldiers pick up their two duffel bags of belongings to go to a country they'd never been. All in the name of protecting America. They're willing to sacrifice their lives and their families because they still believe in this amazing experiment that is America. So if they're willing to sacrifice for us there, shouldn't we be willing to fight for America here?
Governor, I would agree. It would be wonderful if we could get back to where we are a unified country, one nation under God, and we weren't looking at everything divided into various categories and silos like race and male, female, and gender identity and all the things that are separating us in this country. And we get to where we're part of one tribe or another tribe and we hate the other people not knowing why or what the real story is. We just have developed a sort of ingrained hatred in ourselves by the isolation we have even from news, and the news media certainly adds to that with not being all-encompassing and two-sided and expressing the real truths that are out there in many cases. So tell us a little bit more about how you're going to accomplish this.
Republicans have lost the last 7 out of 8 popular votes for president. That is nothing to be proud of. We should want to win the majority of Americans. But the only way we're going to do that is if we leave the negativity and the baggage behind and we go towards a new generational leader. Another hard truth. I believe that President Trump was the right president at the right time. I was proud to serve America in his administration. I agreed with a lot of his policies. But the truth is, rightly or wrongly, chaos follows him. You know I'm right. Chaos follows him everywhere he goes. And with a country divided like we are, and distracted, by the way, and a world that's got threats pointed all at America, we can't afford any of that chaos. We can't be in chaos or we won't survive it. Because let me tell you something. America has an amazing ability to self-correct. An amazing ability to self-correct. Sometimes we have to hit rock bottom to know where up is, and we're there. And so if you look at the national polls and you look at electability, you see that Trump is pretty much even with Biden. On a good day, he might be 2 points up. In every poll, we beat Biden by 10 to 13 points. This is about governorships up and down. This is about House seats. This is about Senate seats. This is about truly righting the ship to get us back to where we need to be. We can do this. I know we can. But in order to do it, it's going to take a lot of courage. Courage for me to run and courage for every one of you to know. Don't complain about what happens in a general election if you don't play in this primary. It matters.
Governor, as we wrap up this hour, let's go back and tell this audience a little bit more about why you're running and how all this started, where you made the decision to run for the President of the United States.
When I announced, they asked me why I was running. And I said, you know, my parents came here 50 years ago to an America that was strong and proud and full of opportunities. I want them to know that country again. I'm doing this for my husband, Michael, and his military brothers and sisters because they need to know their sacrifice matters, that we do love our country. I'm doing this for my daughter who just got married, and I saw how hard it was for her and her husband to buy a home. And I'm doing this for my son who's a senior in college, and I am tired of watching him write papers of things he doesn't believe in just to get an A. And for the first time, 81% of Americans don't think their kids are going to live as good of a life as we have. We can't be okay with that. I'm not okay with that. We do have a country to save. But I'll tell you this, if you will join with me in this fight, I promise you that our best days are yet to come.
Governor, as you ask people to join in your campaign, it's the young people that are getting very active in voting that have, it seems, one major issue, and that's global warming, climate change. What is your position? Because you were instrumental in getting us out of the Paris Accords when you were at the UN, and you supported that policy. Many young people think that China is now going to be reducing its carbon emissions, that 2023 may be the high point, and the next year is going to drop down. They have this hope that China somehow is going to come around to supporting their position and concerns about global warming. What is your view of China and global warming that's that they promise that they're going to be reducing in the future?
Great question. So, without knowing where any of you stand, party-wise or otherwise, I know that every person in this room wants us to have clean air. Every person in this room wants us to have clean water. Every person in this room wants to know that we are leaving our children a world that's going to be there for them. I believe that climate change is real. The reason that I fought to pull us out of the Paris Climate Agreement is because when that came together and all those countries came in the name of protecting our environment, Obama put us under the strictest of regulations that hurt our businesses, that hurt our families, and that was not realistic. And you know what China's plan was? They would deal with it in 10 years. I've dealt with China. 10 years never comes. Now they can tell you everything they want on the emissions. If that were true, then why are they constantly still building coal plants? Because they're doing that right now as we speak. If we truly care about the environment, the way you deal with that is you require China and India to step up and start reducing their emissions and prove it. Prove it. Because they will, China will say a lot, but every time they speak, they lie. And they've never fallen through on anything. And you look at what America does. Our American businesses don't need to be mandated to be green. When I was governor, companies came into our state, they automatically wanted to be as green as possible because they're good stewards of the environment. You look now, Boeing just flew a plane that where the emissions are way down. They're doing it off of cooking oil. I don't even know how you do that, but they're doing it. But the point is, these companies are constantly looking for ways to do it. So the way that we will hold China and India accountable is you don't go and get into a pact at the UN, which is a farce every time. Instead, you go and you get with these other countries and you tell them you have to prove to us not what you're going to do, but you have to actually prove it in actions. We have to see it before we believe it. And there has to be a price that they pay for doing this. That's the way you deal with it. You don't go and put weight on America. You put weight on these guys that refuse to do anything about it. That's how we'll deal with it.
Okay, Governor, give us your wrap-up statement as to why people should vote for you and none of the other candidates that are up for the Republican primary.
First thing, I've been a governor. I know what bureaucracy is. I know how to clean it up. I've run a state. I've worked with an economy that was in shambles. I've not only just built the economy, we turned into an economic powerhouse in the process. We made our state proud again, and we showed the country and the world what strength and grace look like in our worst crisis moments in South Carolina during my tenure. Second reason, every day I was at the United Nations, I dealt with Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, Israel, every one of those hotspots I dealt with. And I dealt with them with strength. I dealt with them in a way that took the kick me sign off our backs. And I dealt with them in a way that they knew what America expected of them instead of us being reactionary. And the third reason is I'm a mom. And the truth is I don't want my kids growing up like this. I don't feel comfortable with the way the country is and just letting my kids have to deal with it. It's not okay. It gives me real heartburn to think about the fact that they just came out with a statistic that the average homeowner age buying a home is 49. 49. It used to be something that when you started your life and your marriage and you worked hard, that was the American 49. I want to know that younger people can buy a home. I want to know they can afford their rent. I want to know that they're going to get a job. I want to know that they're going to live a better life than us, not a worse life than us. So the biggest personal reason is that I'm a mom. And at the end of the day, I will treat America like I treated South Carolina, which was don't mess with my state or there will be hell to pay.
Thank you, Governor Haley, and thank you, audience, for listening through this detailed presentation of the policies and ideas and thoughts and dreams of Governor Nikki Haley. Join us again next week for more political commentary on Healthcare Insight at America's Web Radio.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.